Great to have you along here for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to turn our attention to herbs. Herbs for culinary and medicinal purposes have been around for thousands of years. And up next, our expert will talk about how you can add them to your garden. And that guest is Bevan Cohen. He is an award-winning author, an herbalist, owner of Small House Farm in Michigan. He also hosts the Seeds and Weeds podcast and offers workshops and lectures across the country on the benefits of living closer to the land through seeds, herbs, and locally grown food. And his latest book, and it is a dandy, I like it a lot, it's Herbs in Every Season, 48 Edible and Medicinal Herbs for the Kitchen, Garden, and Apothecary. What are your favorite herbs? How do you use them? What questions do you have about growing herbs? Bevan Cohen, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, Larry, thanks so much for having me here today.
I really like your book. Let's start with something pretty basic. What's the traditional definition of an herb, and maybe versus your definition?
Oh, this is a great question. Now, botanically speaking, an herb is a plant with a fleshy green stem that dies back at the end of the season. So many of the plants that we might even consider to be herbs botanically don't fall into that category. So that would be things like, you know, even rosemary or thyme, which any of us would consider an herb, botanically speaking, really isn't. So in the book, we do talk about a number of plants that I guess don't quite fit that definition, but for all of us, we'd consider them herbs. But we even talk about a few different trees and actually a couple mushrooms as well. There's so many wonderful plants out there. I didn't want to leave anybody out, Larry, so we kind of included a whole bunch of them.
And, you know, before we go too far, you have a kind of a disclaimer at the front of your book. Talk about that a bit.
Well, the disclaimer at the book, there's a couple things that we wanted to talk about in the disclaimer. You know, First off, when we're harvesting any sort of plants, we want to make sure that we're going to properly identify those, especially, you know, if we're using them for food or medicine or anything like that. Every once in a while, some of these beneficial plants will have a doppelganger that maybe isn't quite as beneficial, you know. So we wanted to make sure that we're always making safe and healthy choices when we're out there harvesting plants.
That makes very, very good sense. And I liked how you organized it, your book. It's organized around the seasons, and I assume you had maybe more than one reason for doing that.
Well, you know, it was just kind of, first off, a fun way to organize the herbs, right? But I wanted to make it accessible to folks. You know, what we're going to find is that throughout the seasons, the plants that are available to us kind of change. We've got a few that have come out in the spring, and they're really showing off in the spring, you know, things like violets or dandelions or whatever. And then as we move through summer and into fall, those plants change. But also, Larry, we change, right? And our needs change as well throughout the year, or we could even say maybe the seasons of our lives, right? So it was just such a fascinating observation that as we change, the plants change with us. So we've always got something available to us. Mother Nature is always providing for all of our needs.
Ben in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
So my question is this. I'm fascinated by the medicinal qualities of plants, and I've just been starting to play with hydroponics. And I'm wondering if there's seeds and variations that are more suitable to raise hydroponically.
This is a fantastic question. You know what? Many of our favorite culinary herbs, so we can say again, thyme and rosemary, basil, oregano, many of the mints, those are all plants that are going to do wonderful in a hydroponic situation. You know, what's cool about herbs is that, I mean, they're very easy to grow. They don't mind a little bit of abuse. They're going to do well in basically any soil, it seems like. So herbs are a great place for any gardener to get started, and they're wonderful in a hydroponic situation because herbs are just so adaptable.
Yeah, there you go, Ben. Thank you for calling. What do you think? Are fresh herbs the best?
Well, you know, it depends on what we're going to be doing with them. If we're looking to work with them medicinally or even simply to make like herbal tea, I actually recommend dried herbs. You know, the dried herbs are going to be a little bit more potent. Once we've, you know, dried the herbs, we're just essentially evaporating the water out of them, right? Which concentrates the volatile oils, the chemical constituents, the flavors are a little bit more concentrated. So you don't need as much plant material to make a nice cup of tea as you would if you were working with fresh. But we use fresh herbs quite often in the kitchen as well. So you'll find through the book that we utilize both depending on which situation is right. So we try to guide the reader into understanding what is your ultimate goal for this herb and what is the best way to work with it to achieve that goal.
How long should herbs be, or could they be successfully stored?
This is an awesome question. This is a question I get a lot. You know, the typical rule of thumb you'll often hear is that herbs well stored can keep for a year. But I often find that herbs can keep much longer than that. If we dry the herbs quickly, if we make sure that we dry and process the herbs efficiently and get them put away and store them in an airtight container in a cool, dark location, they can last much longer than that. So every year, though, we're going to want to take stock of our herb supply, open up those jars, look in there. If the herbs still have a very vibrant color, if they're still aromatic, if you can still identify what that plant is by its smell, it's still good enough to use, absolutely, even if more than a year has passed.
Yeah. What have we lost by being able to buy herbs and medicines without growing or gathering ingredients ourselves?
Well, I think we've lost a lot. We've lost our relationship with the world around us in a way. You know, when we're growing our own plants, whether it be for food or medicine, we have that opportunity to develop that relationship. We get to see that plant through its life cycle, you know, from seed to seed, and really get to know everything about it on a more personal level. I think that when we rely on plants that we're just going to be purchasing from the grocery store, we're losing out on a lot of diversity, too. You know, at the grocery store, there's a limited selection of things that are available to us. You know, there's going to be one type of basil available at the grocery. But in your garden, there's dozens of types of basil that you can grow, right? So by growing these things at home, it just opens the door to just a whole wide, wondrous world of diversity out there.
Let's talk about, I said at the beginning that I really enjoyed your book, and I did, and maybe you could describe for our listeners what people are going to find for each of the 48 plants you highlight.
So there are 48 plants, and that's going to be divided into the season. So we've got 12 herbs for each season. And for each one of the herbs, we really try to talk about a little bit of history and folklore about the plant, because I love to share that sort of thing. We're going to find growing information or gathering, if it's a wild plant, when and where to forage the plant, how it likes to be grown in the garden, whatever it might be. We're going to talk about a multitude of uses for the plant medicinally, how we can utilize it in the apothecary, how we can make it into health and beauty products. There's also a whole section on culinary applications for each one of the plants. So we're going to talk about all the different ways that we can use it in the kitchen. And then, Larry, there is a ton of recipes. There are so many recipes in this book for both the kitchen and the apothecary to really help people make use of these plants and use them in new ways and really just explore all of these different flavors and aromas and possibilities that the plants offer us. You know, I really try to use this book as an opportunity to share a snapshot of what life is like for us here at Small House Farm. And herbs are a part of our daily life. They're everything that we do. They're in our food. They're in our medicine. They're in our gardens. They're in our wild places, you know. So I really try to capture all of that and get into the book so people could experience that as well.
I tell you, I was looking at those recipes, and there are so many interesting ones. That goldenrod hollandaise sauce, or the, let's see, what was another one? Oh, there was a, bread. Chamomile bread, I think it was.
Yes, it was. Yeah, we did so many interesting things like that. So for the recipes, I tried to do some things that were, you know, basic ideas. So everybody, yeah, regardless of your experience cooking, you could try these recipes. But I really wanted to kind of push the envelope a little bit, like with this goldenrod hollandaise, or we do a super sunflower cornbread, or a shiitake and lemon balm stuffing. You know, these just kind of a little bit more off-the-wall ideas. Ultimately, to help people feel more confident exploring flavors in the kitchen, but also letting them see plants through a different perspective. That's really the goal here, is to help people see things from a different point of view and try new things and experiment and just appreciate all of these wonderful things and feel brave enough and confident enough to do it. So I really try to explore all sorts of different ways that we could work with these plants.
Yeah, you do indeed. And you talk about extractions in the book, a fair amount. What's that process?
Well, so, you know, it's a very simple process, really. And we could think of an extraction. One of the most common ones your listeners probably know, of course, is like a vanilla extract that we're going to use in the kitchen. That's simply an alcohol extraction. That's vanilla beans in alcohol. And the alcohol extracts, it works as a solvent to extract the alcohol-soluble chemicals from the plant material, from the vanilla bean. And we can do the same thing when we brew a cup of tea. We're using water as the solvent to extract water-soluble chemicals. Or we can utilize oil to extract the fat-soluble chemicals. We can utilize vinegars to extract the minerals from stuff. So essentially, we're just like brewing a cup of tea. You're adding the herbs to a container. You're adding your solvent to it. And then it just pulls out all that goodness, all the colors, all the flavors, all the nutritional value suspended in your solvent, thus making your tea, your tincture, whatever the extract might be.
You know, I was chuckling a little bit. Violets, by the way, are Wisconsin state flower, and we have a lot of them. And you talk about using violets in your book.
Oh, most certainly. I love the violet. I didn't know that it was a state flower. That's very cool. That it's such a beautiful little plant. When we moved out here to Small House Farm, there were no violet on the property at all. And I actually dug some up from a friend's house and brought them and introduced them to my property just so I could have them to enjoy them.
it's and maybe if you can remember, talk about how you use them.
Oh, yeah, we use them in so many different ways. One of the fun ways, and I was just talking with somebody about this earlier too, is we actually made a violet flower syrup. So we would infuse, essentially make a tea with the violet flowers and then make a simple syrup with sugar or honey. And so you have this nice, thick, sweet, beautiful purple syrup that you can make from it. And you can put this in your coffees. You can put this, drizzle it all over cakes or pancakes. I've made frosting with it. So you get like a beautiful purple, violet-flavored frosting. There's just so many cool ways that we can make use of these plants.
Oh, man, that sounds great. Christina in Glenwood City has something, I think, relating to teas. Christina?
Hi there. Thank you. I am wondering if you do anything with SAFT, which is ESSAICT, which contains burdock root, sheep sorrel, turkey rhubarb, and slippery elm bark.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. I have not worked with that particular tea blend before, but it sounds like a very potent herbal combination, most certainly working with the burdock root, which is very nutritious and good for you, those different mushrooms that you've mentioned. That sounds like a very nourishing, supportive tea for your immune system, supporting and strengthening many of your body systems, as a matter of fact. But no, I haven't worked with that particular tea blend before.
Yeah. Christina, does that answer your question?
It does, and I agree with him. It is a very potent, nutritious, and healing form of tea. So I would encourage everybody to look into it. Thank you.
All right. Christina, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Bevan Cohen, award-winning author, herbalist, and owner of Small House Farm in Michigan, and his latest book is Herbs in Every Season, 48 Edible and Medicinal Herbs for the Kitchens, the Garden, and Apothecary. Great to have him with us. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk. Right now, Bevan Cohen is talking with us about herbs, his book, Herbs in Every Season. You know, in the spring section, you had calendula mentioned. Calendula is kind of nice for the flowers, and you say a tangy flavor.
Oh, yeah. I love to grow calendula. You know, it's one of my favorite spring herbs, most certainly. We grow a big patch of it, for sure. We use it, obviously, in the apothecary. It's a nice emollient herb, so it's really good for softening and soothing the skin. So we'll make it into lotions and balms, but it does have a very tangy flavor. Now, in particular, the flower petals here, the leaves can be a little bit more bitter, although they are edible. You know, I would cook them first before I'd eat them, but the petals, you can use them in all sorts of ways. We actually, in the book, we do calendula petal butter sauce. It is absolutely fantastic that I really enjoyed for sure. But, yeah, we do grow a lot of calendula here. Both for its flowers and for its seed. We have a small online seed company, and that's one of our most popular flower seeds that we offer is the calendula. I can never seem to grow enough of it, which I don't mind. It's such a colorful and beautiful plant that I like to tuck it into almost every garden bed.
Another of the plants you mentioned was chickweed, which I found interesting. It provides some early flowers for bees, among other things.
That's right, among many other things, actually. I love to eat it myself. I find it to be quite delicious. We have a big patch of chickweed that grows sort of near the compost area. It's quite abundant. It almost grows like a carpet. And I'll gather it right up, and we can bring it in. When it's young and tender, you can eat it almost sort of like you might eat like sprouts or something. I put it on sandwiches. We add it to salads. It's very delicious. But it can also be gathered up, and we'll infuse it in oil and turn it into balms. It's great for itchy, red, rashy skin conditions. So we'll make it into salves and balms. I love to make a lip balm with chickweed. It's just such a wonderful plant, and it does come out early, and it's got those beautiful little tiny little flowers on it, and all the little pollinators are buzzing about, so they seem to enjoy it just as much as I do.
And I was thinking about dandelions, too. There's rare is the lawn that does not have dandelions in it at some time. How do you use dandelions?
We can utilize the dandelion from the top of the flower to the bottom of the root. The whole thing is wonderful. So, of course, we can gather up the flowers. I'll take dandelion buds before they even open, before the flower opens, and we'll pickle them and use them just like capers. They're very nice. Once the blooms have come on, you can use them in a salad if you want, or we can infuse them into oils to make topical salves. They're mildly analgesic, so that means they offer pain relief. So they're great. We can make a massage oil with them for sore muscles. The leaves are beautiful, delicious, bitter greens. We've been gathering dandelion leaves actually right now, gathering them up. I like to saute them with a little garlic, a little olive oil or something. Absolutely delicious. Or you can have them fresh in salads. And we can even gather up the root. You can use the root for so many things. Of course, it's medicinal. But I also like to, I'll chop the root up, roast it in the oven so it gets a nice kind of like smoky flavor to it. And I'll use it. Now, some people would say a coffee substitute, Larry, but I don't believe there's really a substitute for coffee. So we'll say just like a coffee alternative. It makes a nice dark brew that you can enjoy. It's very rich and flavorful.
Matthew in Iron River, Michigan. We'll go to you now. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Thanks for sharing your experience in this subject. What I was wondering is if you had ever experimented with using distillation for making the extractions from different plants, such as dandelions. I was kind of thinking about trying lavender, and I was just wondering if you ever tried that.
You know what, Matthew? This is an awesome question. So I have not personally utilized distillation to make stuff, but I have some associates. I've worked with some folks that do. They have some beautiful copper stills, and they are going to distill some incredible essential oils. What's really neat about distilling essential oils, and lavender would be such a fantastic choice for it, it's so wonderful, so aromatic, is that you can distill the essential oil, and then the other product that is created is the hydrosol. And the hydrosol is also very useful. It can be used as a topical wash. Some folks even can make delicious beverages with it. You know what I mean? So there's many cool products that you can make through the process of distillation. So I highly recommend you explore that idea and look into it, and you'll find there are so many great plants out there that you can work with. Lavender, of course, being one of them. Spruce tips, that's one of my favorites, a spruce tip essential oil. Oh, wow, so nice. So absolutely, Matthew, you should check that out.
Matthew, thanks for calling. You know, another one of the spring plants that you mentioned was dill. And, you know, we kind of all have, you know, there's one way to look at dill, but you have other ways to look at dill other than just in pickling.
Well, let's not forget how great pickles are, you know what I mean? We should do a lot of dill for pickles. I mean, we pickle so many things, not just the cucumbers, but I like to pickle eggplants and baby zucchinis. I'll use the dill sometimes when I'm pickling my dandelion buds if we want to get that dill flavor. But dill is also a fantastic herb for a number of other things as well. So if we move that dill into the apothecary, we could think about utilizing the dill as an astringent wash, which is really nice for oily skin, for acne conditions, that sort of thing. It's great in a tea for stomach upset, digestive complaints. So there's lots of cool ways that we can use the dill. And not just the leaf or the fronds of the plant, but the dill seed is also wonderful. I've even used the dill flower. It makes a very vibrantly flavored tea. But all parts of that plant are useful and totally awesome.
And what about parsley? Parsley, lots of us grow parsley. What about ways that we use parsley?
You know, it's always sad for me to see parsley just sort of get regulated as like a little garnish on the side of the plate, you know? This plant has so much potential. We can use it for so many things. The most important thing to note about parsley, I think, I'll say two things about it. One is how nutritious parsley is. It is loaded with vitamins and minerals, and that's kind of what gives it that flavor. You can almost taste the minerals in it. It's very, very strong, the flavor, and that's just the minerals coming through. And when we want to utilize the minerals in an herb, one of the best ways to extract that is utilizing vinegar. The acid in the vinegar will help pull those minerals out of that plant material. So we can make some really delicious salad dressings and marinades, just steeping the parsley, the leaf, or again, the seed is useful here, into these vinegars just to make some fantastic. I love it as a marinade for like chicken and fish and that sort of thing. So good.
Yeah, it sounds pretty darn good to me. You make everything sound really good, Bevan. And yeah, not only in your speaking, but in your writing as well. I want to try everything in the book. You know, you had some interesting, you had at the end of the book, and we can go back to other things as well, but you said there's a difference between the herb and the herbalist. We move together in tandem on our journey through life. It's not that we're working with nature. We are nature. We're learning to work more closely with ourselves. And you talked kind of a little bit at the beginning of the book, but maybe just expand on that for a touch.
Well, I think this is an interesting point. I'm glad that you brought this up. You know, working on this book has been many seasons in the making. And to really explore these ideas. Now, of course, this concept of relationship with the natural world is a big part of everything that I teach. Whenever I'm trying to teach people about whether it's herbalism or gardening, seed saving, whatever it might be, is this concept of relationship with the world around us, right? And fostering and nurturing that relationship. But working on this book and observing myself and the plants through the seasons and seeing that we were really one and the same. I find that we do ourselves a disservice if we think of ourselves as separate from nature, as we are cultivating the earth or whatever it might be, because we are nature, right? So I think that ultimately maybe this could be the thread throughout the book that I'm the tapestry that I'm trying to weave is this idea that we are the world around us, and that when we treat the world around us with respect, we benefit from that because we are that world, right? If we think about ourselves as separate, then maybe we're not going to be as responsible with our choices. Maybe we're not going to conserve the wild resources the way that we possibly should, right? But when we realize that nature and the gardener are one and the same, and it's a mutually beneficial relationship that we have, we might make different decisions out there. We might make more responsible decisions. And in the world that we're in right now, it seems like we really need to start making some very responsible decisions about the natural world around us.
Yeah, it was all good points. And I wanted to get your thoughts in on that before we get to the end of the show. One more question I think we might have time to answer. Devin, have you in the book, DIY ailments for things like mosquito bites and sunburn, those things are found in the book.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. And you'll find that we're going to experience those ailments in the summertime. And as many of the summer herbs that approach us, they're going to be perfect for that. You know, if we think about like another common weed that everybody experiences in their gardens, plantain. Plantain is a wonderful herb for helping us soothe the itching and swelling associated with insect bites. So right as we're experiencing that ailment, nature is providing us with the cure, right? So there are some very practical things. You know, we really pushed the boundary and tried to experiment with fun recipes and off-the-wall types of way of thinking, but there's a lot of it that's very much grounded in reality. These are day-to-day issues that we're going to face, and the herbs are right there to provide us, you know, for solutions to those as well.
And again, what's your website?
Smallhousefarm.com.
And you can find pretty much everything at there. I've been on the site. It's a great site. And Bevan, I want to thank you so much for taking some time to be with us today. I like your book a lot, and it was great talking with you. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Larry. Thank you so much.
Bevan Cohen, award-winning author, herbalist, owner of Small House Farm in Michigan. And the book we've been talking about is titled Herbs in Every Season. Subtitle, 48 Edible and Medicinal Herbs for the Kitchen, Garden, and Apothecary. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening to Garden Talk, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.